the Danielle Strickland Podcast. We're glad you're here. For more information on what Danielle does, go to daniellestrickland.com.
All right, James, here we are, podcast episode 3.
Episode 3.
We're still on Dead Mentors.
We're still on Dead Mentors.
The first category.
I was naive enough to think that our six different subjects would be six different podcasts, and now I'm like, how busy am I in 2023? Like, that's how.
No, we promised to get through this, but you know, we got to give these
folks
proper props.
There's a lot to talk about.
And also just a recognition that books are life-changing and impactful, and wow, I'm so thankful for people who write them.
I think one of the things that has been striking for me, actually, is even the people that we've mentioned so far, Martin Luther King and Dietrich Bonhoeffer, these are huge, significant names. And in my head, I kind of go, well, everyone's heard of those people. But then I think back to actually when I first heard about those people. Yeah. And I didn't hear about Bonhoeffer until I was in my early 20s because I wasn't really in the Christian world.
Right.
And so actually that was really inspiring. I thought, well, either people are listening and being encouraged that they're not alone in being inspired by people.
Yes.
Or, like, what's really beautiful is maybe there's people listening like, I hadn't heard of this guy. Are they everything I thought they would be? I haven't heard of this woman. Is she as fiery as I've heard? And, I learned a lot about Catherine Booth last time. So
yeah, and I think sometimes the other thing, too, is because they're such big names, people are used to knowing about them, but actually haven't read them. And I think that's different, too. Like, when you actually read those source books or information, it just really does something. There's something about what they're carrying. Even like, so with the Booths, it's like Victorian English, it's old.
Yeah.
But there's something about like what they're carrying that just infects you with this like spiritual fervency. It's really cool.
Mm.
So who you got?
Yeah, well, the two people we've got less from Dead Mentors, or three or four, we couldn't even decide before we start. There's just a lot of inspirational people, and I will say not everyone we talk about from now on is going to be alive necessarily. But I feel that one person that I knew that I couldn't ignore is Brennan Manning.
Yeah.
He has a number of books, but The Ragamuffin Gospel, I think, was incredibly formulative for me in my kind of mid-20s, when I guess I'd sort of stumbled into the Christian world and was used to being told that we weren't very good, or we were sinful, or we were bad, and didn't really know what to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Brennan Manning speaks of just a raw and reckless love of God, I think, as well as anyone ever has. I think that's been...
Yeah, he's come up a lot in the comments as well. So people have, you know, a lot of people have been impacted. I feel like that Ragamuffin Gospel was like a shift.
Mm.
Like there was a spiritual shift that happened with that introduction of this idea of just the grace of God, really. That's probably the big, he just ushered in grace in such a way that made us understand.
And drew us closer. I think that's the thing that I stopped wanting to run away from God. Once I read Brennan Manning, and I'd read a few other people that kind of made me excited for God. But in terms of that intimacy, for me, Brennan Manning was the one that allowed me to draw closer. What's interesting about this is we tend to be talking about the author as well as what they're writing. And I think there's something nice in acknowledging both, but Brennan Manning was one who, by his own admission, sort of struggled with alcoholism his entire life. And
okay, so I was telling you this before, but like I read the autobiography of Brennan Manning.
Yeah.
And I finished going, this guy really was terrible. I'm not terrible. Like, I mean, he just was the worst priest I've ever met in my life. Like when he's like, I am a sinner. And I'm like, yeah, you really are. Like he left the priesthood twice, got married, got divorced. Went back to the... I mean, it's just like, what on earth? So the fact that he really understood from a visceral level what it meant to be loved by God despite your failings, I think you can tell he understood it.
Yeah, and he speaks so much about we are loved even when we don't think we're worthy of being loved, that we're loved just as we are completely. And I think that's so significant. I mean, I'll bring in a quote now because that's what we do. This might be the earliest we've worn a quote. This is one from him that has been quite profound for me. It says, for those who feel their lives are a grave disappointment to God, It requires enormous amount of trust, reckless, raging confidence to accept that the love of Jesus that knows no shadow of alteration or change. When Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy burdened," he assumed we would grow weary, discouraged, and disheartened along the way. These words are a touching testimony to the genuine humanness of Jesus. He had no romantic notion of the cost of discipleship. He knew that following him was an unsentimental as duty, as demanding as love. I think, yeah, there's such a humanity and to the way that he talks about Jesus, but also a completely profound otherworldly love. I think being able to do both of those things is quite special.
Yeah, and a tenderness. I even think of the reemergence in this season, at least in my life, of the person of Jesus, you know, which sounds ridiculous as a Christian to say, but it is true. Just the reemergence of Jesus as a central figure of someone who is fully human and fully divine and offering us an invitation and a tenderness and a grace to be human, you know, which I think is where, I mean, he was just really before his time in so many ways, because religion still was this hard, try to level up everybody, like be better. Like it was, you know, and I think religion always has this, it gets captured by this idea of like basically self-help and like trying to perform better and act better and be better. And then you have this guy who's just like, no, actually, it's really just about the love of God. And allowing yourself to be loved for who you really are. It gave so much permission for people to just be who they are, which like we could use more of that even still. Just permission to be who you are, human, broken, weary, but then also to allow the love of God to meet you there.
Yeah, I think recognizing that humanity and theologians and philosophers have struggled with the idea of what it is for Jesus to be completely God and completely human. And I think Brennan Manning just gets it more than most people do, because he talks about the kind of, again, the brokenness of Jesus, but also, and he has this line, Jesus was victorious, not because he never flinched, talked back or questioned, but having flinched, talked back and questioned, he remained faithful. And I think so much of what we see in some of the less savory parts of Christianity is that, you know, doubt is seen as failure or questioning is seen as insubordinates, which I know we both get accused of and kind of see it as a badge of honor after a while. But again, the idea that like, yeah, you know, there are times when Jesus talked back, and times he wasn't as well, but that didn't make him any less God, that it was impossible for him to not feel that way. He also,
well, and the struggle's part of the human, the struggle's part of the human condition. So like to stop pretending like there isn't a struggle and embrace the struggle, but somehow be faithful in the middle of this. Like this isn't unfaithfulness to struggle. It's unfaithfulness to struggle and then turn away, not to struggle and turn towards.
And the Bible is ram full of people who struggle. The Bible is ram full of people who question why God is doing what God is doing. The Bible is ram full of people who doubt. It's so interesting to me that we've got to this idea that faith or belief means no questions or not even, again, those cries of like, why God? Right. That's something that humanity has been screaming at God before we even knew. Who God was far long before Jesus was revealed to us. And so I think having words to that is so helpful to me. I think the other thing that I love about Brennan Manning, he's very realistic and earthy. As Daniel said, his autobiography that's called All Is Grace is a perfect book, but it's hard to read because he's very warts and all about his self-perception and still, even at the end of his life, is still struggling. Again, even those things that he knows that he is loved by God. He has put it more eloquently than anyone ever, and yet he still struggles, which is both hard to understand because I like to think I'll kind of get to that point one day, but also recognize that maybe this is something, and maybe it's that brokenness that allows him to, because he needs it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you didn't need it, then maybe he wouldn't put it quite so beautifully.
Yeah, and I mean, he wrote it himself, so it's also evidence that he really refused to be anything other than what he was. And I think he probably even like that, the angle by which he views his life is probably pretty harsh, because I think he realized it didn't matter. Like the love of God was the point. So it is hard to read though, when you're like, if, when you're a functional, like when you like brought up in this religious system where you want people to be good, right? And I want him to be good. Like he's an impactful Christian leader. So I just want him to be a better priest. I'm like, I want him to be better. And I guess inside that is like, I want to be better too, right? Mm. So that's that. I wonder if I had the capacity to do an autobiography telling the absolute naked truth of my motive and my decisions and my, I mean, it's intense.
My eyebrows are like going up right now. I realize this is a podcast, so people can't understand my facial expressions, but he's realistic about it, right? He says that the sinners to whom Jesus directed his messianic ministry were not those who skipped Monday morning devotions or Sunday church. His ministry was to those whom society considered real sinners. They had done nothing to merit salvation, yet they opened themselves to the gift that was offered them. Mm. And what a powerful reminder, and something that we sometimes, again, when people say like, I'm the worst of all sinners, you're like, but you're not though. You feel bad about doing this thing.
Well, I have a friend who says, most of your sins are boring. Okay.
I want to hang out with his friend.
Right. Like if you're going to sin, right? Isn't that Augustine who says sin boldly?
Just, yeah, that's right.
Go ahead. Just sin boldly. If you're going to do it, just... Anyway, that's not permission to sin, by the way.
But the idea
of us with all this angst, and they're just these little... Like, it's just us fully not embracing the gift that is the grace of God. I mean, what and how we would live differently if we fully understood that we were completely loved as we are. And if we lived out of that, it'd be different. We'd be different. We'd lead differently. We'd live differently. We'd love differently. I mean, God grant it. What else? You got another quote by Manning?
And that's why you should read Brennan Manning. So that's it. Yeah. Actually, no, those are the only ones I have written down. But
the Ragamuffin Gospel is the classic. So if you don't know where to start with Manning, start there. I'm going to say a contemporary of Manning's who at the same season embraced a lot of depth and insight is Nouwen, Henry Nouwen. And I don't even know that. I mean, again, in the comments, Nouwen was mentioned a lot. And I would say I don't even know of a Christian leader who hasn't been impacted by Henry Nouwen. So I think that's a fascinating. And again, Henry Nouwen, and I mean, there's so many books. The Wounded Healer is probably one of the most popular ones. The Prodigal Son.
Yeah,
his take on the prodigal son is like, whew, amazing. Read it.
It's kind of one of the required pieces of reading, I think. That if you're thinking of giving Christianity a go, read Return of the Prodigal Son by Henry Nouwen.
Yeah. And if you're a leader, Wounded Healer is actually also fantastic. And I think one of the great things about Henry Nouwen is not only was he a gifted writer and a gifted thinker, but then he actually lived out the truth. So that helps. And we talked about that. Like the most life impact for me are people who write profound things, but then live those same things out in real life. So if you can get a hold of Nouwen's books, one of the great things, of course, is he left academia, sort of Harvard, Duke, at the height of his career. And he left and joined L'Arche, which was a community. And he was a carer for an adult with disabilities. And kind of figured out from scratch this downward liberation that God had in mind for him to be more Christ-like and what really mattered. And then he spoke actually out of that place of discovering that this truth lived out is way sweeter and way better than he could have imagined. So Nouwen's got to get a mention as a mentor.
I think so. One quote, we mentioned the Wounded Healer. She said that's a useful resource for leaders. And actually my counselor, who I see every 2 weeks, kept on talking about Wounded Healers. And I'm like, do you know like Henry Nouwen? Out of interest, I think it's an idea in psychology as well. And he runs with it. But this is such an important line for me. And I think an important line for anyone with any sort of power. He says leadership, but I think it's just anyone with power right now. It's like the great illusion of leadership is to think that you can be led out of the desert by someone that's never been there.
Whoa.
And that hurts, so right. Whoa. And because it's that cool, like give up your platform as he did. Right. And in the name of Jesus. So he went to L'Arche and worked alongside those with different abilities and differently abled. And sometimes he'd take them as a guest with him as well.
Yeah.
And he talked about one time his friend said, "I would like to speak." And Henry's like, "Who am I to deny this guy his opportunity to speak?" And he said, like, "Henry is my friend." Like, that was his kind of message. But even every part of it is just this beautiful submission and recognition, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I think also when you work in those environments and you find Christ there, you know, you also shed this kind of savior complex that you're rushing in to save the world. And you start realizing that God is at work saving you, you know, in every relationship and in everything. So I feel like you can really feel that in him, you know, a shift from like, ooh, I better wax eloquent and be super important and have a wonderful academic reputation, to this, like, actually being a friend is probably the most profound thing I could do with my life. And it's really a beautiful, it's like you can relax into his words, right? And his life example. Like, we can just, and he struggled. I think some of his journals and stuff as well, he was a struggler.
Yep.
I don't know that there is a person that's had any impact that doesn't struggle. So for those of you listening, to fellow strugglers out there, you're in good company.
Let this be your siren call. Henry Nouwen is one of these people that, yeah, is so important and talks about Jesus as such an authenticity. I'll also say one thing that's important to me, In the Name of Jesus is a really short book. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, man, these guys are recommending and In the Name of Jesus is super short,
yes,
very readable. If nothing
very
else, like,
profound.
Yeah, like, let that be the thing. He speaks about Jesus wonderfully too. This line that I haven't got in my head for a while. It's like, Jesus was a revolutionary who didn't become an extremist because he didn't offer an ideology, but he offered himself.
Mm.
And I think that's so important to us as well, that what does it mean to just be? And we see this later. So Wounded Healer, he wrote earlier in his career. And then you see this kind of progression as it takes hold. And it's like, well, of course, I'm going to go live on L'Arche with folks without any power.
Right.
Because how else can I do this?
Right. Now, and here's another one, Buechner, Frederick Buechner. And anyone who knows me at all knows that I've been very impacted by the writings of Frederick Buechner. I got a hold of a book called Telling the Truth, The Gospel as Tragedy, Comedy, and Fairy Tale. And I have probably bought 25 of these books and given them away. I'm not even kidding. And I also read this book every year for like probably 15 years in a row. It's kind of like Telling the Truth and Strength to Love by Martin Luther King Jr. are kind of my go-to yearly reads. And Telling the Truth just is really just this profound bit of writing about the internal life and the reality of a preacher. So if you're a speaker at all, I highly recommend you grab this book and read it. He divides this as the gospel as tragedy, comedy, and fairy tale. And in the tragedy course, he said, the pressure on the preacher, of course, is to speak just the answer. The answer is what people have come to hear and what he has also come to hear, preaching always as much to himself as to anybody to keep his spirits up. And then he goes through all the different answers people have in the world. The pressure is to be a public relations man. And why not? Only not to neglect of private relations, the relations especially of a man with God, and with God less as a presence much of the time than as an absence, an empty place where grace and peace belong. The preacher has to be willing to speak as tragic a word as Jesus speaks, which is the word that even if all the problems that can be solved are solved, poverty, war, ignorance, injustice, disease, and even if all the answers the world can give are proved each in its own way workable, even so man labors and is heavy laden in his helplessness. Poor naked wretch that bides the pelting of the storm that is no less pitiless for all the preaching of all the preachers.
So read Telling the Truth slowly and be gentle with yourself. It's worth saying Buechner as well is one of the people that inspired Brennan Manning. He is one of the kind of seminal authors that help make sense of the people that have helped us make sense of things.
Right.
And that comes through, I think. He speaks also with a hopefulness and an optimism at times.
Yeah.
And I think there's a quote that I have here. I'll take a little bit of time because it's so rich. But he's talking about the fact that we're really not as hopeful or as excited as perhaps we should be. That people are prepared for everything except the fact that beyond the darkness of their blindness, there is a great light. They are prepared to go on breaking their backs, playing the same old field until the cows come home, without seeing until they stub their toes on it, that there is a treasure buried in the rich field, rich enough to buy Texas. They are prepared for a God who strikes hard bargains, but not a God who gives as much for an hour's work as for a day's. They are prepared for a mustard seed kingdom, no bigger than the eye of a newt, but not for the great banyan that becomes with birds in its branches singing Mozart. They are prepared for the pot. This is my favorite line. They are prepared for the potluck summer at First Presbyterian, but not for the marriage supper of the Lamb. And when the bridegroom finally arrives at midnight with the vine leaves in his hair, they turn up their lamps to light him on his way, all the way, right, only to have forgotten the oil to light them. And they stand there with their big, bare, virginal feet glimmering faintly in the dark.
Yeah, it's intense. He's so intense.
He's really intense.
He sucks you into the deeper places, right? Which is such, I mean, even just one of those lines out of that, you know, just, I mean, you know, you're going on breaking backs, plowing the same old field until the cows come home without seeing, until they stub their toes on it, that there's a treasure buried in the field. I mean, he paints these pictures and offers this depth of understanding. So one of the things they say about Buechner is they said he was always too irreverent for Christians and he was too Christian for everyone else. So he's kind of like right in that in between. And I once asked, like, who's the new Buechner, you know, in terms of like, who is, because he really like pastored leaders in so many ways. He led leaders, but also like he just really, he really rode this, like, I am not going to be so religious that I can't be approachable.
And his influence and his fruit is telling of that as
yes,
well.
Yes, absolutely. The person that I was recommended was Anne Lamott. That's actually how I discovered Anne Lamott, was through Buechner's, I read everything he had written. Literally, like, once you capture this guy's writing, you're just like, what else has he written? And there's like Whistling in the Dark, and there's all kinds. I would highly recommend anything that he wrote, but I would say start with Telling the Truth. I think it's one of the most profound books I've ever read. It's impacted me so deeply.
Yeah.
And we're just going to mention one more.
Go on, man.
I am going to mention Mandela. And at the risk of just sounding weird, like, and this is when James and I were making this list, we didn't want it to be like weird, but at the same time, we just wanted to be honest. And I would say that one of the characters and the people who wrote, you know, writings, including his own autobiography, The Long Walk Home. And then I'm reading now from Conversations with Myself, which is a collection of like letters that he wrote from prison. And various things, speeches and things, a lot of which never got to the people that were supposed to get them because of apartheid. But just the way that he thought, the way that he was, the struggle that he had, the honesty, the grace, the forgiveness, the way that he changed his mind and was honest about it. I remember visiting Robben Island one time, and you get a former prisoner guard as your tour guide. At least for now, they're almost all retired and almost all gone. But I remember going through this prison and this guy telling me his experience and then sitting down, and you could ask him, you're with people from all around the world, you can just ask this guy anything that you want. And one of the people put up their hands and said, who made Nelson Mandela the leader in prison, right? Because they'll say Nelson Mandela was the leader here. And the guy just laughed. He just laughed. And then he said, I guess it was God. That was his answer.
Checkmate.
And I thought that's kind of a cool, like, no one even assigned him this role. This is just what he did. He just was chosen, I guess, by the Lord for such a time. So this is what he talks about, the cell. And I read this during the height of COVID with a whole bunch of pastors who were worried about what was going to happen to their church. And what was happening in the season where they couldn't gather and they couldn't be with their people. And I mentioned Paul the Apostle and most of China and almost all the Christians in Iraq who also couldn't gather and whose leaders were in prison. and the church seems to be doing fine. So, but anyway.
Doing better, actually.
Yeah, here's Nelson Mandela. So the cell is an ideal place to learn to know yourself, to search realistically and regularly the process of your own mind and feelings. In judging our progress as individuals, we tend to concentrate on external factors, such as one's social position, influence and popularity, wealth, and standard of education. These are, of course, important in measuring one's success in material matters, and it's perfectly understandable if many people exert themselves mainly to achieve all these. But internal factors may be even more crucial in assessing one's development as a human being. Honesty, sincerity, simplicity, humility, pure generosity, absence of vanity, readiness to serve others, qualities which are within easy reach of every soul, are the foundation of one's spiritual life. Development in matters of this nature is inconceivable without serious introspection, without knowing yourself, your weaknesses and mistakes. At least if for nothing else, the cell gives you the opportunity to look daily into your entire conduct, to overcome the bad and develop whatever is good in you. Regular meditation, say about 15 minutes a day before you turn in, can be fruitful in this regard. You may find it difficult at first to pinpoint the negative features in your life, but the 10th attempt may yield rich rewards. Never forget that a saint is a sinner who keeps on trying. Anyway, that's just his, you know, the little promo at the beginning, one of the letters that he wrote to himself, conversations that he was having from his cell. So just, I think just his depth of self-understanding and mercy and genuine willingness to embrace others. And, you know, his life is just so filled with this, you know, where he goes out of his way. He went, you know, the guy that he took over for, that kind of had to leave the dismantlement of his party and kind of left an embarrassment. And his wife didn't come to a celebration that he hosted. And, you know, loads of people don't even know this, but he went privately and took a piece of cake to her to meet with her in private and say, "I understand this has been hard for you."
Yeah.
And you just think like, what? Yeah. Nobody does that. And like nobody saw that. No one would even have known that. Like it was written about years and years and years later. But just this idea, like his tenderness and his ability to see other human beings who had caused so much suffering in his life, but as humans who were worthy of compassion and kindness and genuine affection. I mean, yeah, he's just taught me a lot. I'm still learning from him.
This is Dead Mentors. That's the idea, right?
Dead Mentors. Dead Mentors. So if you have a chance when this is played, put your dead mentors in the comments. Maybe we can do a shout out for them. The next episode is going to be on
Living Prophets.
Living Prophets. And that's going to be rich.
Well, alive at the time of recording. Well,
yes, that's
see
right.
How long we take.
That could take another year. But anyway, this is the end of the Dead Mentors section. You may be glad to know 3 episodes later. And we're moving on to Living Prophets. All right. Catch you later. Thanks for listening. Bye.